congratulations once again to Maggie Munson from Regina. She is this week's winner of Saskatchewan's Smartest Radio Listener. The question today, I was starting to panic a little bit. I thought, oh, maybe we're not going to get an answer before the bottom of the hour. The question, each year, people in a part of Scandinavia double us here in Canada when it comes to this. The answer was eating candy. They consume, on average, 35 pounds of candy per person a year. It's a lot of candy. That's a lot more probably than is left over in the bag from Halloween trick-or-treating. I noticed someone brought a whole tub of it in here to the newsroom today. It's a good way to get rid of your Halloween candy. But congrats again, Maggie Munson of Regina, for knowing that. She is this week's SSRL winner. And of course, we'll be back next Wednesday to do it all over again. Federal budget came down yesterday, and they are talking about this being an investment in a generational view of what is going to be good for Canada going forward.
This is not a transformational. This is a generational shift. And we need to meet this moment with generational investment.
That was François-Philippe Champagne, who is the finance minister for the Liberal government. We heard from the Conservatives right afterwards. Pierre Poilievre not making it sound like they were going to be supporting it.
I think we can say that while talk is cheap, it's very expensive when a Liberal finance minister does it.
So, big spending in the budget. Big hopes come with the budget. The total spend, $581 billion. The deficit number in this year's budget, 78.3. So that's how much we add to the debt. Keep in mind, we're spending billions of dollars each year just to service the debt, which many people will point out is just something that doesn't feel like it's sustainable going forward. And they worry about future generations there as well. We always appreciate bringing different guests on the program after something like this budget being presented to help us weed through it and understand the different points of it. Jason Childs does a great job of that, University of Regina professor of economics. We chatted with Jason first thing this morning, just after 8:30, and I was curious to get his take off the start of the budget.
Well, to get the smart aleck out of the way here, I am so sick of buzzword bingo. I would really love governments of all stripe and at all levels to just present the numbers. That said, this is a big budget. There's a lot of spending here. We're looking at about 18-19% of every dollar that's spent in Canada is going to be spent by the federal government under this budget. And we're looking at a really big deficit. So this is a big budget. There's a lot of money flowing around in here, and not a lot of really fine details.
You know, there's lots of talk. If you think about how, you know, we spend our finances and manage our finances in our personal life, there's this talk between good debt and bad debt. Does that apply to the federal government? I feel like that's the narrative that they're pushing, that this this isn't debt, this is an investment in our future. Do you see it that way?
To a degree, yes. The idea is pretty sound. If we're actually buying assets that are going to generate meaningful economic activity in the future, then thinking about it a little bit differently than just spending one and done, it's gone, makes a lot of sense. The problem is always the case comes in the implementation. It's really easy and tempting for governments to stuff spending that isn't meaningful investment in the future into that budget and say, look, these are investments, and when they're never going to return anything to us. So, and we've seen some of that in this budget. If you go through the list of projects that are there, that are in there on page 103 of the budget, for those who are taking notes at home, you'll see some of those investments aren't really investments.
Like, give me an example, Jason, what you're talking about.
Community centers, things like that. They're nice to have. You know, not a bad idea, but they're not investments, they're consumption spending.
Jason Childs is my guest. I feel like I'm in actually one of your classes because we're talking assets and liabilities and good debt and bad debt. Is that part of the strategy of Prime Minister Mark Carney? He's really making this distinction between the operational budget and the capital budget. Why is that?
Some of it's salesmanship. Some of it's going to be, you know, a little bit of the magic trick. Pay attention to my left hand while my right hand picks your pocket. Some of it is honest truth in reporting and financial numbers. Again, it's that distinction, the difference between types of spending and what we can expect it to do and whether that spending is a good idea now or not. We're not in a great fiscal position here. We're better than some. We're worse than others. And when you roll up the whole thing, you've got this problem of provincial debt, municipal debt, federal debt, all adding up to a lot more than what we're talking about. So even though we're in a little bit of a tough position here, you know, if there's an investment opportunity that is a real investment opportunity, it might make sense to go after that.
Mm-hmm. Jason Childs, University of Regina, professor of economics. The deficit, the growing debt is something that has obviously a lot of eyes on it. Lots of speculation before the budget came down what it would be. We know it's $78.3 billion. In fact, it's going to be $300 billion in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. That seems like a big deal. The amount of money, for example, that we pay to service the debt alone, at what point does the debt become problematic, or is it already, Jason?
I'm of the opinion it's already problematic. And remember, in the budget, a budget is an aspirational document. This is, if everything goes as exactly as we imagine it's going to go, then we're going to be $78.3 billion in debt. If we don't get the GDP growth we're expecting, or if we get some other need for expenditure, we're going to blow past that. And if you look at particularly the projections further out for the year after and the year after that, which you talked about with that $300 billion total spend, this government has never hit those marks. So next year there will be something else come along, and the forecast deficit will be meaningless. The actual deficit that we'll see in the next budget will probably be larger. And at some point, look, we're seeing, you know, we need about a 15% GST by the end of what they're forecasting here to service just the federal debt. That ignores provincial and municipal debt, which is also going to have to be serviced, and that all that servicing comes out of one set of pockets, and that's the taxpayers of Canada.
And, you know, I hate the word servicing because it essentially implies to me that we're basically paying the interest we need to. We're keeping our nose above water. But, you know, we want to dig down. We want to get rid of that debt. So, we've seen federal governments obviously play a role in incentivizing economic growth. How do you see the approach that has been taken here by the Mark Carney government to do just that? Have they dug too deep, or have they maybe struck a balance that is probably where we need to be given the environment we're in right now?
It's going to come down to the details in a lot of cases. I don't think this hits the mark. I think what they needed to be doing was changing some of the legislation and some of the red tape here, rather than, you know, creating workarounds and throwing more money through tax credits at the problem. For example, there's big changes to the rates at which projects or capital investments can be written down. Now, that'll help, but if I'm worried about losing title to the property that I buy to build a factory on, it doesn't matter how quickly you let me write it down against taxes. It takes 6 years to get an environmental approval, it doesn't matter how quickly I can write down the capital expenditure once I start building. It's 6 years is too long, or whatever. You know what I'm trying to get at, mm-hmm. is that notion of we've got all these other things in the way, and I haven't seen any movement on those other than this centralization of power in the PMO that allows you to bypass existing legislation and existing law.
Economist Jason Childs is my guest. You know, I think there's a lot of people that were looking for, and will still be this morning, watching and listening to news stories, combing through articles to see what's in it for me. I know even just in the newsroom this morning, people are saying, like, 6 months from now, am I going to notice a difference in my bank account? Am I going to notice a difference at the grocery store? I don't feel like that's the case. Do you agree, Jason?
I agree with you 100%. Just for fun, one of the things I do with these budget documents is I just do a general search to find out how many times things like Saskatchewan appear. A total of 9 times over nearly 500 pages. And that's it. right? So this budget is not targeted at Saskatchewan at all. The only thing that really comes up in any meaningful way is the agri-stability program, and other people have commented on that it's just not going to do what we need it to do.
Mm-hmm. There is, of course, some sector relief, some changes to employment insurance for those that are affected by tariffs. But I've said this before, and I'm curious to hear your opinion. I feel like that helps auto workers, but does nothing for farmers. Farmers aren't going and getting retrained to work in a different industry as a rule.
No, and you know, if you're working a farm out of Assiniboia or, you know, some more remote area of Saskatchewan, your local opportunities are really limited. It's not like you're in Toronto when you've got, okay, I'm going to switch from assembling cars to assembling dishwashers or something like that. That's none of these things help us. And what I find really aggravating is the problem with canola and China is, again, designed to protect those auto workers. And there's been no relief for us really in a meaningful way on that front.
I think the notion of if you're a person that accepts, okay, these are investments in our future, so it's short-term pain for long-term gain, essentially. Do we have a sense of the timeline on that, what we're hearing from government versus what the tipping point, the reality is when we start to see, obviously, things move from being in the negative to being in the positive?
Not in the time span of this budget. So we're looking 5 years out. They're forecasting a return to about 2% real GDP growth in about 27-28, but I think that's wildly optimistic. I don't see these projects, once they even get started, once we get shovels on the ground, I don't see them paying dividends in terms of anything other than the benefit of construction in the next 5 to 10 years.
Often people will shoot a text in as I'm having a conversation like I am with you, Jason, and ask a question almost like, you know, they're joining in the conversation. And I've got a text here from Linda saying, I keep hearing debt to GDP ratio, although I don't completely understand. Can you give us just the Reader's Digest of why this measure is something that's important to follow?
Sure. It tells you how much we owe relative to what our potential income is. So based on this, in 26-27, these are numbers right out of the budget, this is the projection, we will owe 43.1% of everything that gets produced in Canada. That'll be our debt. So we have, if we didn't consume anything for nearly 6 months, we could pay off all our debt. And that's just at the federal level. When you throw in when you roll up all the provincial debt, that number is over 100%. So we'd have to eat nothing for a year to pay off all our debt.
I'm going to be opening up phone lines momentarily and asking, getting opinions from listeners, and I'm going to ask them if they would like to give this budget a grade. Have you got a A, B, C, D, E, F grade?
Again, without a lot of the details and having had more time, like this is a document I would love to have had a week to have gone through.
Yeah.
I'm thinking C minus. Yeah. This is it's a bit of a Hail Mary. I don't see, again, we're talking about $40 billion or so in, infrastructure spending. Well, that doesn't buy that much infrastructure. And we aren't seeing a real wind down or change in any of the underlying conditions, or not many of them. And that's what worries me more than the specific numbers.
That was Jason Childs this morning, University of Regina Professor of Economics. And we appreciate him joining us, just like Devin Meskel did, to pull apart the budget a little bit, look at it from a few different angles, revisit some of the thoughts that you had. I've got some texts I didn't get a chance to get to. We'll read out to you next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Just after 9 o'clock this morning, we fired open the lines, whether it was the phone line or the text line, to hear from you and your thoughts on the budget. I was asking people to give it a grade. I didn't see much other than Fs. Lots of failing grades on the text line and lots of texts. You know, here's one, for example. Dale in Regina said, the 28,000 reduction in the civil service is a joke. Don't forget, Trudeau hired almost 100,000 more government workers, and now these guys are going to reduce 28,000 over 4 years. This is not meaningful, sufficient, or acceptable in the way of a reduction. Other texts. In fact, I saw a text. I know I won't be able to find it right now, but a text suggesting on the reduction of the public service, saying, don't forget that that public service, while, yes, they are no longer on the payroll, they are, though, receiving pension. So they're drawing pension from the pension plan. One of the texters wanted to point that out. You know, the other part of, well, here's another one I'll just grab before I move on. John and Drake, as far as the budget goes pertaining to just the military spending, I'll believe it when I actually see results of getting the military where it needs to be. It's hard to catch up after 80 years of neglect. That's John and Drake, but John's points that he makes about the military, I would say, were on a number of texts that we saw this morning. The other issue that we got into quite the chat about, and I noticed we threw a clip up on the Evan Bray Show Facebook page, and there's people taking exception with my point on this. This is the point of Conservative caucus member Chris D'Entremont, who's a Conservative MP from Nova Scotia, who decided on budget day, right around the time the budget's being announced, to say, I'm removing my Conservative jersey, I'm throwing on a Liberal jersey, and I will be supporting this budget, and I will be now part of the Liberal team. I don't like that. This is a person who was elected on the premise that he was going to represent his people with the Conservative Party of Canada. So a number of people suggesting, well, okay, go back, trigger a by-election. See if you can win the election again as a Liberal. And perhaps he could, but I just don't like the pretense under which he won the election and then decides on his own to change his mind. I know we did a news conference this morning saying I consulted with people back home. I don't like it. And according to, I'm going to guess, on average, 4 out of every 5 texts that we got in agreed with me on that as well. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.